Today, Governor Charlie Baker announced a four-stage plan, or four phases, for our state to reopen, possibly beginning as soon as next week. Meanwhile, Rhode Island's stay-at-home order officially ended on Saturday, and that state is now continuing social distancing measures, but some offices, non-critical businesses, even state parks are open there. Retail stores in certain Maine counties can open, and four malls in New Hampshire reopened today. So, as our neighbors begin to open up and we start to plan in earnest for our own opening, seemed like it was a good time to check in with some of our medical experts on what this means and to answer any questions that you might have. So call. What are your questions for today's panel of medical experts? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. Now joining us on the line is Dr. Shira Doron, infectious disease physician and hospital epidemiologist at Tufts Medical Center. Dr. Doron, good to have you back. Thank you.
Good to be here.
And also with us is Lenny Marcus, founding co-director of the National Preparedness Leadership Initiative, a joint program of the Harvard Chan School of Public Health and the Kennedy School of Government. Thanks for joining us again, Lenny Marcus. Good to have you.
Sienna, happy to be with you.
So let me just ask the two of you, what are your reactions to the states opening up around us right now?
Well, this is a step in the right direction. And I think there are several elements of this that are very important. First off, it's a very clear step-by-step approach. And one of the important elements that's built into it is the notion that we're going to move backwards if people aren't compliant with the recommendations and the constraints and restrictions of each phase. So in many ways, this is a grand experiment that's dependent on individual compliance. If we can keep our numbers down, we'll be able to move from one phase to the next. And if not, we could find ourselves moving backwards.
And Dr. Doron, what would you add to that?
Yeah, I agree completely. We are not at a stage where the infection is gone from society. We're not at a stage where it's no longer circulating. We are still very much at a stage where there's a lot of infection out there, and it is very possible to see the numbers rise right back up to where they were when all of these measures were put in place and when hospitals were, you know, getting sort of close to overwhelmed, although we never got totally overwhelmed here in Massachusetts. So without a lot of continued effort by everyone in society, we are really in a situation where we have to be really careful because we could see all of those measures ratcheting right back down and driving us right back inside.
All right. Well, the calls are already just pouring in, so I want to go ahead and get to them. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to ask your coronavirus question of Lenny Marcus and Dr. Shira Doron. We've got Don on the line from Cambridge. Don, you are up. What's your question?
What's the state of the art and the future for home testing specimen collection for both tests, for testing for current infections and testing for previously infected?
Yeah.
Thanks for that question, Don.
I can take a stab at that. So there are some exciting technologies out there being worked on, being scaled up around home testing. One of the most exciting, I think, is PCR-based testing. The PCR is the test that we've been using mostly with a nasal swab, but PCR-based testing using saliva. And that's easy because you spit into some kind of a tube and you put it in the mail and you send it off. And that really gets the test right into people's hands where they need it. It means you don't have to, you know, get in your car and drive to some testing site when you're feeling ill. It means that you don't even have to drive somewhere where you're not feeling ill, but you just have a sore throat or a runny nose, which a lot of people, you know, aren't willing to do. And so what we really need to get a handle on this virus is that kind of widely available testing that people can just do anytime they think they might have any symptoms. On the serology side, there is some technology being developed that could allow people to do like a finger prick blood test at home. That's the antibody test that tells you if you have had it. Theoretically, that could be used for things like, you know, people have talked about the immunity passport or, you know, being allowed to, you know, having people who have already had the virus be allowed to be out and about more so than people who haven't yet. But the sensitivity and specificity of the test characteristics are just not good enough yet to be able to do that.
All right, let's take another question. 1-800. Oh, please. Go ahead.
Okay. Just jump in. We've put a lot of emphasis on testing. And I think if we have those tests available, it'll be a big plus. We have to distinguish, though, that even though we have testing, it's still important to maintain social distancing, to wear the mask. The test is not a cure. The test is just simply a diagnostic.
Okay, I'm going to go back to a call. And Lenny Marcus, we're having a little bit of trouble with your sound. I'm wondering if that's something that we'll be able to work on while I take another call here. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I have Ellen on the line from Brookline. Ellen, what's your question?
I'm a 69-year-old type 2 diabetic. And so I know the fact that I have diabetes, that I know alone makes me more vulnerable than I normally would be. So let's say I went to the town of Brookline public health, would public health department, would I be able to get a test there or what?
So Dr. Durone, we're still trying to get Lenny's sound back, so let me just turn that one to you.
Sure, yeah. So the public health departments could probably direct you to where a test can be done in the area where you live, but they're generally not at this point. They're certainly not doing them at the public health department. And they're generally not doing tests now for people without symptoms. So that PCR test, it tells you whether you have the infection right now. If you got that test today, it would only tell you whether you have the infection today. And then as soon as you walk out of there, you're going to wonder, you know, if you have the infection tomorrow. And so it's really not necessarily practical to test everyone with any frequency that's going to be that helpful right now. Again, that's where something like an at-home test might come into play, because maybe we could get to a place where there's enough testing to be testing people without symptoms on a frequent basis. Now, this antibody test that we were talking about, if we could get those test characteristics to a place where they're really valuable, that could tell us if somebody has had the infection, and then they can stop. Now, the other really difficult thing about the antibody test is we actually don't know if you have antibodies right now, whether those antibodies are sufficient to protect you from future infection, and if so, for how long. So those are all the reasons why the antibody tests right now are just not ready for prime time.
And we do have Lenny Marcus back with us.
Yes, I'm back with you.
Great, thank you. Before I go to the next call, let me just ask you to kind of try to characterize, if you can at this point, I don't know if it's a scale of 1 to 10 or how you want to do it, but how essential is quality and widespread testing to our ability to move forward?
It's absolutely critical for us to know what we're dealing with. Policymakers are having to make important decisions about opening businesses, about opening offices, public transportation, and the better the data that they have about the disease that's spreading across the population, the better will be their decisions. We're right now, from a policy perspective, making good guesswork decisions. We simply don't know what the future is like. However, these tests will provide policymakers critical information, in particular as these tests provide trending information. So it's not simply what we get for today or tomorrow. It's what happens over days and weeks and months that provide us the best data upon which decision-making can be made.
Thank you. Calls just keep coming in, so let's keep taking them. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And I have Michael on the line from Cambridge. Michael, what's your question?
Hi. I know we hear a lot about, of course, social distancing and covering our mouths and nose, but what about our eyes? I understand the eyes are quite vulnerable as a place where we could contract. So what about, should we be wearing sunglasses or goggles or something as well?
Great question. We do cover our eyes here in the hospital, certainly when we are taking care of patients who have COVID. We've actually moved at my hospital to more of a universal approach to eye protection. So we're wearing eye protection whenever we're anywhere with patients, so not even necessarily during patient care. The mask or the face covering that people wear, you know, because it contains their cough and their breathing, can largely should make it so that you don't need the eye protection as much. And certainly when you combine that with the distancing, the 6-foot distancing, that helps as well. There are some epidemiologists who think that the future state is everyone wearing a face shield as opposed to everyone wearing a mask. So that's eye protection that, you know, goes down and covers both your mouth and your nose and your eyes, and that actually might be the most effective way and actually perhaps preferred from a social standpoint because you can see people's facial expressions better. So that's something that's been put out there as a proposal for the future.
And Michael, it's important to remember that your hand can bring the virus up to your face and can get inside you. So one of the purposes of the mask is to discourage you from touching your face, especially if your hand isn't protected.
And what of this constant tension that we hear about the mask is to, you know, protect you and protect others, and yet we tend to touch our faces more when we're wearing masks because we're adjusting them and we're aware of them, et cetera.
It's a good reminder to be careful with touching your face and a good reminder to wash your hands very frequently and just to have your own personal behaviors and your personal attention to reduce the possibility that you're going to transfer the virus from your hands into your body.
Let's take another call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got Marilyn on the line from Brookline. Marilyn, what's your question?
I've been hearing about diarrhea as an early symptom of disease. I'm wondering if some people just get diarrhea and nothing else.
Is that still possible? Okay, let's turn to Dr. Derone.
Yeah, we do see patients whose only symptom is diarrhea. Now, is it possible that they have diarrhea from another reason and they actually have asymptomatic COVID? It's possible. But we do know that there is a decent percentage of patients who present with diarrhea as part of the disease. And we know that there are patients that don't have respiratory symptoms. So, you know, I think it is possible that if diarrhea is your only symptom, it could represent COVID.
Are there other single symptoms like that, Dr. Derone, that we should know about?
Well, the loss of smell and taste can be very profound and can be the only symptom in some patients.
All right, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got our experts here. Keep the calls coming. We'll get your questions answered if we can. Suzanne is on the line from Concord. Suzanne, what's your question?
Hi, I am a childcare provider and hoping to go back to work taking care of children. And I'm gravely concerned about the appropriate PPE to wear and what other equipment should we be wearing?
Great question.
Very good question. As we know, children spread disease quite readily, and so I definitely understand your concern. We also know that, you know, children tend to not manifest a lot of symptoms of this virus, and so they could be asymptomatic carriers who are transmitting infection. And it's tough. It's very tough. So, you know, the face covering or mask, I would probably recommend eye protection in your case, especially since, you know, kids might be, you know, spitting and slobbering. And then, you know, I think one thing about PPE, personal protective equipment, is this question about gloves. Do they help or do they hurt? You know, if you think of it as something that's protective, but then again, like we talked about before, but you touch your face with them because you somehow feel that you're protected because you're wearing gloves, it can actually hurt because people don't tend to do hand hygiene over gloves where they do remember that they need to do hand hygiene on their hands. Personally, for me, I prefer to just use bare hands, and then whenever I've touched something that somebody else has touched or whenever I've touched somebody else, I don't touch my face until I've cleaned my hands.
So, Suzanne, do you have any concerns that that level of PPE will be frightening or disturbing to the kids in childcare?
Yeah.
Was that question for me?
It was.
Yes, I am very concerned. I would like to wear the face shield because I think I can talk to children and see them and smile at them. I just don't know if that's an appropriate thing to wear as opposed to a face mask. I'm very confused.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. You know, the data aren't as robust about the level of protection, but like I said, there are some epidemiologists who are really favoring the use of a face shield over a face mask for this virus.
So we're out of time for calls. I do apologize. We have full lines, and I'm sorry we won't be able to get to more. We have just a minute or two left. And Lenny Marcus, before we go, I did want to ask you, how do we think about the social dimensions of the sets of steps we're going to have to take to return? How quickly can we as humans adjust to the scope of the changes we have to start putting one foot in front of the other again?
That's a really important question. And we've had a lot of experience. We're in week 9 of the social distancing strategies that were put in place way back in early March. So we've learned a lot. And I think it's important for everyone to really take a mirror to themselves, take a mirror to their families and their loved ones and their the places where they work, and ask themselves the questions about how they can successfully take the next step. And so I think the governor and the state are giving us some really good recommendations of a step-by-step process, always reminding us that we also could go backwards. So everything that we can put in place to remind ourselves to stay on track is absolutely critical in going forward.
And in the last 30 seconds or so, Dr. Shira Durone, what other thoughts would you want to share with our listeners today?
I think I would just share that it's just been hard for so many people, everyone really, and some more than others. We can be excited about the reopening. We should be cautiously optimistic, though, because there may be some pumping of the brakes. There may be some reopenings and some reclosings over the next months or even years. And this is our new normal.
And that's Dr. Shira Durone, infectious disease physician and hospital epidemiologist at Tufts Medical Center. Thanks for coming back and joining us, Dr. Durone.
Thank you.
And Lenny Marcus, founding director of the National Preparedness Leadership Initiative, which is a joint program of the Harvard Chan School of Public Health and the Kennedy School of Government. Thanks for being with us again today. I do appreciate it.
Thank you.